Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Mark Wright of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Sorry, no good martinis today. We've got bad, bad, and crazy, and our first bad martini deals with President Obama's speech to the Democratic National Convention on Wednesday night. Yes, it was well-delivered. He's pretty good at that. But if we thought Bill Clinton has an issue with the truth, Barack Obama has a very fractured relationship with the truth. Mark, it's been a glorious 8 years. Everyone is so happy. We're all together. We've had such great progress on so many things. Everybody's happy that we have Obamacare now. Everybody's happy with the economic record. Everybody's happy with how Obama has united the country. Not so much, yet that would be the perception that he would have anyone who hasn't paid any attention for the past 8 years come away with after last night's speech. A couple different things here. First of all, the Democrats have had a problem even referring to ISIS, much less talking about it in any detail. We'll see if that changes with Hillary on Thursday night. But here's Barack Obama vowing how tough Hillary Clinton's going to be on ISIS.
Our troops have pounded ISIL without mercy, taking out their leaders, taking back territory. And I know Hillary won't relent until ISIL is destroyed. She will finish the job.
There you go, America. Hillary's going to fight just as hard as Obama against ISIS, which a lot of folks don't think has been all that hard. But then here's the America that Barack Obama knows.
I see Americans of every party, every background, every faith, who believe that we are stronger together. Black, white, Latino, Asian, Native American, young, old, gay, straight, men, women, folks with disabilities, all pledging allegiance under the same proud flag to this big, bold country that we love. That's what I see. That's the America I know.
Mark, that sounds pretty good. And if it were true, it would really be pretty good for the most part. The problem is that on every major issue along the way, whether it's on race, whether it's on gender, whether it's on sexual orientation, whether it's on class, you name it, the president has tried to advance his agenda by dividing people.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that it's morning in America, Greg. I think that's what we can take out of last night's speech. Look, there's no question that President Obama, he had his fastball last night. He gave a very good speech on the merits of the oratory. But when you actually peel back the layers and you look at what he was saying, it doesn't match up to his record. It doesn't match up to America's position in the world from a national security standpoint. It doesn't stand up to an economic outlook. There's, yes, the unemployment rate has dropped, but if you look at the labor participation rate, it's still at one of the lowest levels since the late 1970s. Inflation's up. The economy is sluggish. What was galling about this speech was that Barack Obama was telling Americans that if we just work together, that we can get along and the country can go on to these new sunlit uplands. But if there's been one person in the last 8 years who has refused to compromise, who's demonized his opponents, who has vilified the people that just disagree with him politically, it's been Barack Obama. And it was really a disconnect, I think, from his rhetoric last night, which was uplifting, to his record over the last 8 years.
What do you make of the fact that it seems like Barack Obama and to some extent even Joe Biden were trying to co-opt the usual Republican message, since Trump's message and the message of the Republican convention has been seen as dark? If you're in the media, you have to use the term dark to describe Trump's speech. It's mandatory because I'm pretty sure every media outlet did that. But it wasn't as sunny. There wasn't much of an optimistic vision, just these are big problems we have to deal with, and I'm the guy to fix them. And Joe Biden even hijacked Marco Rubio's, this is going to be the 21st century and it's going to be an American century. And Barack Obama was kind of, you know, giving the message you might have even heard from a Reagan speech a generation ago. So what did you make of the strategy, and do you think it's actually going to be believed?
Well, as Rich Lowry, the editor over here at National Review, said, they're stealing our lines. And I think there's two parts here. One is, from a legacy standpoint, the president and the vice president need to make it seem that things are going very well. They want to be remembered in good stead from the countrymen. They want people to think that the record is very positive. From a political perspective, what they're doing here is very simple, and it's very smart. They're trying to steal the center ground of the country. They want to co-opt a few, at least traditional conservative and Republican rhetorical ploys, and they want to make it sound to anyone who is in the middle or anybody who's a little bit wavering on voting for Donald Trump because of his manifest problems, they might think, well, okay, at least the Democrats this year are sort of sounding like some of the Republicans we voted for in the past. Maybe we'll give the Democrats another shot. I think it's a smart play. The downside here, though, is interesting, too. There is a sense in the country right now, if you look at the right track, wrong track numbers, most Americans don't think we're going in the right way. So will it backfire on the Democrats if they constantly promote this everything is going swell message right now when Donald Trump's saying, no, everything's a disaster. Bernie Sanders is saying everything's a disaster. So it'll be very interesting whether the American public at large decides to buy what the president is selling or say, no, actually, you know, I can believe you or I can believe my pocketbook and go with somebody who thinks that the system needs to be burned down like Trump. It's a very interesting ploy they're doing. I think a smart ploy in the long run, but we'll see.
Let's keep talking about divisiveness as we head into our second bad martini. You may remember back in the 2008 presidential campaign, Barack Obama was locked in a tough fight with Hillary Clinton, and this was just before the Pennsylvania primary. But in the days before that, Obama headed out to San Francisco for a private fundraiser, and he was recorded unbeknownst to him, and he was talking about how communities in the Rust Belt were frustrated by promises from previous administrations that things were going to get better economically and never were. And so this is how he articulated it.
Each successive administration has said that somehow these communities are going to regenerate, and they have not. So it's not surprising then that they get better and they cling to guns or religion or antipathy towards people who aren't like them, right?
That's the infamous bitter clinger comment there, that when people don't see things going their way economically, they get bitter and they cling to guns and their religion, and they get wary of people who don't look like them. That was at least in private. Obama tried to walk it back pretty feebly back in 2008. Here's Nancy Pelosi live on television at the 2016 Democratic National Convention trying to explain away the fact that low-educated Americans who are white are overwhelmingly in favor of Donald Trump.
So many times white non-college educated white males have voted Republican. They voted against their own economic interest because of guns, because of gays, and because of God, the three G's, God being the woman's right to choose.
Mark, if you care about abortion, the gay issue, or guns, you're too stupid to understand what's good for you.
Yeah, there's two things about this. One is I think it's very clear that this is what Democrats actually believe. When you take what Pelosi said last night and you connect it to what the president said 8 years ago, and also various other comments he said all throughout his presidency, this is what modern progressives believe. They brook no dissent. You cannot rationally disagree with them on a political issue. If you disagree with them, you're either racist, you hate gays. One of my favorite lines of what she said is, these people aren't voting in their self-interest, meaning Nancy Pelosi knows better than you what's good for you. That's essentially what she was saying, which is, you know, an incredible drop of the mask, really, when you think about what she said. But even if she was right, which I entirely disagree with her on the merits, but even if she was right, why would you say this on national television? If you're trying to win these people's votes, she essentially said, well, we're going to try and get those yokel idiots out there in the boondocks. We're going to try and get them to vote for us, but it's going to be tough because they're too stupid to know what's good for them. It's a crazy thing to say, even if it were true, which I think most Americans, when they hear this, would say, no, actually, I just disagree with you. It's not because I'm racist or because I hate people who aren't like me, or, as you know, it's or I'm clinging to the three G's, as Pelosi said. People are allowed to have rational disagreements legitimate disagreements in this country. Apparently, the Democrats don't agree, though.
Well, speaking of unrehearsed comments, let's move to our crazy martini now. And if Donald Trump was hoping to interrupt the news cycle of convention week, he did a pretty good job of that. Just not sure that it was ultimately in his favor. Our crazy martini is essentially an indictment of both campaigns for their horrific handling of the issue related to allegations that Russia hacked into the DNC, and now Donald Trump suggesting that perhaps Russia is the one to find, or perhaps already has, the emails that Hillary deleted from her private server.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
Trump later tried to explain that he was saying, well, if Russia already has them, they should release them, not that Russia should hack into our system. That explanation did not carry much water with Democrats or with the mainstream press. Hillary Clinton's campaign and other Democrats immediately saying that this borders on treason and he's inviting a foreign adversary to hack in. But Charles Krauthammer over at Fox News, no fan of Trump, mind you, had this analysis.
It set a trap that the Clinton campaign fell right into. In that statement that you showed from the Clinton campaign, it said, you're inviting a foreign power to invade our national security. Now, these are the emails that she deleted because they were supposedly private. These are the ones that were supposedly not work-related. These are the ones where she discusses her yoga lessons and wedding planning. So if that's what really in the 30,000 deleted emails, then there's no national security to be involved at all. So the Clinton campaign ends up admitting that perhaps there really is work-related, if not classified stuff, on the emails which she deleted, which I think would be the grounds for a charge of obstruction.
Mark, we just can't get one normal day on this campaign, can we?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with the good doctor's analysis here. A couple of things. Number one, it was hilarious to see the very same people on the left who said, nothing to see here when it came to Hillary's email scandal. This is all overblown. And as soon as Trump says something, treason, the New York Daily News said that Donald Trump had broken the Logan Act, which is a very old law outlawing private citizens engaging in diplomacy with foreign governments. You know, regardless of what you think of Donald Trump, whether he was joking or not, I actually tend to think he was kind of joking on this one. But the reaction from the left was hysterical. You can't have it both ways. Hillary's emails were either about the yoga routines and Hillary's bridesmaids' dresses, or this was a national security issue. If this was a national security issue and she actually did delete emails that had to do with the nation's defense and her job as the Secretary of State, well, then that's a very serious problem for Hillary Clinton. Moreover, I think that we should, as far as Democrats go, they should really just drop emails and they should just go back to the fax machine. I think that would be better for everyone involved if they just completely left emails behind and left the internet behind, because they're clearly not capable of using it responsibly.
Well, Huma had to show Hillary how to use the fax machine, too. But I think in a weird thing that the Clintons did here that was probably not too smart is to claim that they had to delete half their emails for yoga and wedding and details about Hillary's mom's funeral. 30,000 emails on those three subjects, and it matches the entire amount of work-related emails that you did over 4 years. They should have done a better job fudging the numbers there.
That's right. And we should bear in mind that it's likely, this is not hyperbole to say this, it's likely that the Russians actually do have Hillary's emails already. They don't have to hack anyone to get them. They already did this. The FBI director said that there's no way, because the security was so low on her email server when they forensically analyzed trying to determine whether there was a hack on her system, the FBI couldn't determine because there wasn't any safeguards on her system, and the basic safeguards that Google would have on your Gmail account. And there's just no way to know years later if the Russians had access. And knowledgeable sources and people who know about this kind of thing say that it's very likely that the Russians were reading Hillary's emails in real time while she was the Secretary of State and handling classified information on her server. So, whatever's happening today, the Russians probably already have these things.
Very scary to think about that. And Trump is absolutely right about one other thing that happened at that press conference, where he said that if the emails that got hacked out of the DNC and released by WikiLeaks, with all the pejoratives about blacks and gays and Latinos and all these other groups that the Democrats are supposedly the champions of, this story would be relentless for days and days and days and weeks, and the media just couldn't stomach it for more than about a day and a half. And by Monday night, by the time Michelle Obama spoke, I think that was about the last we heard of it. The double standard on this particular issue, we see it all the time, of course, but he is absolutely right that it is stark on this one.
The press has been trying to bury the story to get it to move on. But while I have no inside information, and I don't think National Review has any sources with WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks head honcho guy, has said in the last week or two that more emails are coming. So if he does actually have more leaks to spread out to the public domain, maybe we'll get to see more of the internal deliberations of the Democratic National Committee in the upcoming weeks, which could be very damaging to the Clinton campaign as we head towards Election Day. But we'll see. We'll see if that actually happens.
Yeah, it could. We'll see what the timing of it is, too. So, Mark, great to have you with us again today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Mark Wright of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and please tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.